Welcome to Love Hate Automate, the podcast where digital dreams dress tomorrow's reality. I'm your host, Dale Parr, and with my weekly guests, we'll be diving into the vibrant world of digital fashion. Each episode, we stitch together innovation, creativity, and a splash of the unexpected. Today, I have the pleasure of welcoming Dave Carr to the show. Now, Dave is Head of Strategy and Communications at a brand new project called NeoLife that I'll allow Dave to tell you about in a second. But to give you a little bit of background, Dave has huge level of expertise in advertising and publishing and a veteran of probably 5 years in the Web3 space, having been part of the early days of Decentraland, Parcel, and Over the Reality. Dave, welcome to the show today.
Thanks, Dale. Appreciate it. Good to be here.
It's great to have you on. Like, I know we've known each other for a couple of years, various projects, but you know, perhaps you could introduce yourself and tell the audience a bit about what you've been up to.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, I started on this journey about 5 years ago with Decentraland. I joined their marketing team. Wasn't really that familiar with this whole notion of the metaverse or blockchain or decentralization, but I jumped in because I'd had a background in video games. I'd worked in advertising for a number of years, publishing, that kind of stuff. So I was really interested in story and all that kind of stuff. And then things just took off. Anybody who's kind of been paying attention to it will know that it sort of exploded in the last few years.
Just a bit, yeah.
Which was a surprise even to the guys at Decentraland how crazy it became. And I don't think I ever really left Decentraland, actually. I still went back and forth contributing to various events and bits of marketing. But I headed to an organization called Parcel, which was a marketplace for virtual real estate, which was, you know, serving this massive land grab that kind of happened when the metaverse took off. Headed up business development there and worked with a lot of creators. We were very involved in the first Metaverse Fashion Week. We had an experience there showcasing new creative designers. Started around that time as an advisor to Over the Reality, which is an augmented reality side of the metaverse. They have a digital layer that wraps around the physical world and individual hexagons of land is where you can actually place digital assets, and then through currently smart devices you can see that content integrated with the physical world. And I think anybody who's been paying attention to the Apple Vision Pro will get a sense of how that works. You can be standing in your living room or somewhere else, and you can see the digital merged with the physical world. So I think that's and then that will obviously slim down to smaller glasses, that kind of thing. So
because there was a good activation for Milan Fashion Week, wasn't there, with Bored Ape a couple of years ago, and Pinko have also been using the Over technologies.
Yeah, we took over. We mapped, by map I mean we basically took a hell of a lot of images of the main piazza in Milan next to the cathedral, and that allowed us to accurately place digital assets. There was a Bored Ape there. There were products sort of floating above the square, mm-hmm. And then we had avatars dressed in designer outfits walking through the piazza. Now, this was viewed from a balcony of a venue, and it was all kind of geared for that spectacle. So that was a really successful activation, and Pinko were involved and a lot of really cool up and coming designers. So these days, as you mentioned, I'm working on creative strategy and comms for a brand new metaverse platform. It's called NeoLife. It's got people from Decentraland working in it, founded by a guy who started the Chain Guardians project. We've got people from Framestore who've worked on Marvel films. We've got people who've worked on video games like The Witcher and CryptoPunk. Been designing for Mercedes-Benz. So a lot of really rich talents in there. And there's a real ambition to learn from I guess, the mistakes of what we call Metaverse 1.0 and yeah. make a better meta, if you like, for Metaverse 2.0, which is kind of what's on the way.
So what's the premise of NeoLife?
It's ultimately, I mean, it kind of stems out of this tagline of leveling up to a new world. And ultimately, it's built on the Unreal Engine. It's blockchain-based, so it's a decentralized, you know, we're firm believers in this notion of creator ownership and governance. Yeah. But it's effectively, as I said, learning all of those lessons from having worked at Decentraland and having had a lot of contact with various Metaverse projects, you know, through our partnership work and through our business development work, and really creating a space that you know, if we do it right, gets it right for people, and we'll focus very much on allowing creators and brands and gamers to come in and feel ownership of that space and build that ecosystem out with a fully gamified environment. So you know that offer. Look, if I was going to wrap it up in a one word sentence, it's probably Roblox for grown-ups, yeah, ultimately. Okay.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that is a format that's definitely working, right? You know that.
Absolutely, but I think, you know, if I look at my son, who's a Roblox fan and a devotee, he is keen to be a creator, but he hits a brick wall when it comes to how do I create like I see that guy creating? And then if I buy something, how do I resell it and not get, you know, rinsed on the commission that Roblox takes, you know? And then for someone who's a bit more advanced, how do I turn my Robux into a currency that I can then cash out? I think Roblox places some restrictions on you know, that flow of currency from Robux to crypto or to fiat currency. So it's really
The off-ramp is really important, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. It's taking it from being a centralized, highly controlled platform and opening it up so that it does feel like you can transact and you can create and you can engage and be rewarded for that engagement, not just on the terms of the sort of central governing body, if you like.
Well, that's the thing is creators need money to for the basic things in life, and so you can't have all of your earnings locked away in a kind of, you know, a nebulous currency like Robux. You know, you need to be able to convert that out. Yeah,
and I think the people who are making good money on Roblox are those studios who work with brands to bring them into the space. Now, it doesn't mean that what it means is that the Web 2 side of that is still where the money's at. You know, I can't exist in Roblox and generate my own little empire or you know, or even a cooperative or a community that is managing to do well out of that. And I feel like that needs to be that channel needs to be opened up.
Yeah, well, NeoLife certainly sounds like it's ready to serve. That sounds really, really exciting.
Yeah, that's the ambition, you know. And like I say, I mean, I can't stress enough, we constantly look at, I mean, we obviously see other projects in development that we get a lot of inspiration from. We get a huge amount of inspiration from video games, and you know, old school stuff that people forget about, like you know, World of Warcraft and the huge mm-hmm. communities that grew up around that. But again, we also look at the decentralized projects and mistakes that we personally made, that platforms made, and the sticking points and the ways that people were unable to access or scale up, or you know, that lack of interoperability, etc. And we're just looking to find solutions and build them into the NeoLife experience.
Yeah, the knowledge and the understanding over kind of, you know, a number of years from the first Decentraland kind of fashion week and the hype of 2020 was it?
Yeah. So yeah, Decentraland launched February 2020, and yeah. Then I suppose you had pandemic, which gave it a boost, and then you had Zuckerberg saying, "Hey, we're building the metaverse," and everyone was like, "The what?" You know, and then here we are.
Yeah, exactly. So let's get into the body of the show, Dave. So you know, the first port of call is always love. You know, trying to keep things positive. What is it about the space, be it gaming, fashion, culture, or the intersection of all three, that's really captivating you at the moment?
Yeah, what I love is brands, and I guess if we stick to, you know, the idea of fashion, it's brands that firstly are bold enough to jump into the space, but also get it, like they understand the type of user who's in the space, how the space works, mm-hmm. but also they don't just jump in, and of course there's nothing wrong with that, but they don't just jump in for a quick win. They understand that it's a long term. Yeah. Play that this is still a very early ecosystem, and that involvement needs to start now, and I think that can be R&D, that can be dipping your toe into the water, that can be partnering up with people and working on gradual collaborations. But yeah, I love it when brands do it right, because you see so many examples of people doing it wrong, you know. So when somebody gets it right, it really sticks out, and you think, yes, that's exactly, you know, what needs to happen. And I guess in terms of good examples of that, I think, you know, at the beginning with Nike's purchase of Artifact, let's say, I felt like that was an example of a brand that understood where this thing was heading. And then of course that crossover to the Dot Swoosh initiative, where people could design in digital and then receive in physical. There's obviously been a lot of initiatives where, oh, you know, you'll be able to get the phygital kind of movement, which is, you know, own the digital and the physical. I think owning the digital is still very, very much in its infancy. But I think that there is still a big and it's probably a channel that flows back the other way. You know, it's about having the physical product, and that gives you a range of digital benefits, as opposed to the digital and then, oh, you also get a physical product. I think, you know, there's still a lot of integration between the Web 2 and Web 3 side of things before we're looking at Web 3 first.
I think some projects that haven't done so well are ones that try and offer too much utility without really contemplating, you know, the time and resource and cost that it takes to actually make that come to fruition. And then in terms of the audience, they kind of feel like that they're being underserved, because their hopes of what this asset is likely to become doesn't always manifest.
Something really basic, like they just forget about where their customers are in this massive race to you know, jump into this metaverse space or Web3. They forget that they have this enormous pool of customers that, and they just sort of think, well, I'll create this and that they'll all just want to be part of that, and it's just not the case. Or they think the existing community in a sandbox or a Decentraland or what have you, well, they'll just jump in. I think it's different for something like Roblox and Fortnite, because those are established games with a large established user base. But the metaverse, the actual decentralized metaverse platforms, they don't have that community. Or if they do, it's a much smaller community than a brand would be ultimately looking for. And so I think, but having said that, there is still a really fascinating utility of leveraging Web3 technology to really make your Web2 offering and your physical offering just much more brilliant for people, I think.
It's about knowing your customer ultimately, isn't it? And giving them a product or a service or an experience that works for them, because often it comes across in the Web3 space as being a little bit complicated to engage, and that's a big problem.
Yeah, and like in any industry, there are a ton of people working in Web3 who don't get what they're doing. You know, that's probably not a secret to many people, but it's, yeah, like I say, in a lot of industries, most people are just kind of making it up as they go along, with the best of intentions in some cases. But I think that, yeah.
Because decentralization does not mean complicated, you know. Just because
it doesn't have to mean complicated, no.
No. And unfortunately, it's picked up that tag along the way, which we do need to clean that up.
Yeah, and I think that's come about because of its attachment to crypto, and people just think ultimately it's a scam. If I need to have a wallet, all my stuff's going to get stolen. So I think the detachment from crypto and from decentralized finance to a greater list degree, you know, that there is this standalone opportunity that's there, but that can ultimately be inextricably linked to the physical experience. Ultimately, it's another really powerful channel for brands to add to their portfolio. It's not just a way to like, oh, well, we'll dump it here and sit back and it's all gonna come up roses. It just doesn't work like that. You have to integrate it just as you would release a TV commercial. You would back it up with initiatives in other mediums. You know, I think that's what people need to get to.
Yeah, I think brands just need to realize what their purpose is within the whole value chain, you know, between them, you know, their partners, their wholesale partners, their customers, and where they sit and what their purpose is. And often brands are there to design products and create stories and experiences. The selling happens often by third-party wholesale customers. The purchasing happens with customers of those wholesale customers, of those stores. And so really, it's almost like a mechanism to build brand, drive desire around the product, but then let everybody else do the transactional part of things, because that's what they're there to do. That's their team within the value chain. And I think brands like Tommy, certainly in Roblox, Tommy have done really, really well there, as have Nike. They are just focusing on that rather than trying to be, you know, the experience, the company delivering the experiences, or trying to host the transactions or provide the currency. They kind of know what they should be doing. And I think those guys are certainly doing that really, really well.
Yeah, I think so. And even, you know, that sort of, you know, incorporates the physical side of things or the physical product side of things. But there's even smaller activations. Like one of my favorite stories is of Lowe's Hardware in the States who did a metaverse activation, which and a lot of brands will have built an experience in a Decentraland or a sandbox, and it'll be like almost like a gallery of their products, you know. Whereas Lowe's created almost like a hardware store, but they didn't have products that you could buy in the physical world for physical purposes. What they did is they understood that there was a creator pool in these worlds who were using assets to drag and drop into structures they were building. And so they kind of created a Lowe's for the metaverse. And for me, that is like shows great understanding of, we understand that, you know, there's a creator community in here that needs digital assets to drag and drop into stuff they're building. And so I just felt like that was a really clever understanding of an application of what they do in the physical world, and here's what we do in a virtual world. I just thought that was quite cool because they got it, and I think it establishes goodwill for the brand, which is I think another opportunity for brands and in terms of fashion brands to partner with for communities that are passionate about creating wearables or are interested in even putting on fashion events in the virtual space, you know, that just that level of support and showing interest and you know, finding initiatives where you can encourage more and more people into that space. I feel like that goodwill building, this is a great period to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think, you know, it comes back to commitment. You know, it's exciting at the beginning, and hopefully Lowe's continue to kind of provide that service. It sounds like there's a need for it. Unfortunately, you get projects like Starbucks, Odyssey, and they're kind of scaling out. So they're leaving, you know, and they're potentially alienating some of their most loyal customers in just having them being at the peak of loyalty 8-10 months ago when they opened Odyssey, to the point of being really disgruntled with Starbucks because they're closing it down and leaving them in the lurch. So obviously there's lots of frustrations in the space still. Like you say, lots of learnings. What is it that frustrates you about things at the moment?
Yeah, I guess it's probably directly linked to the stuff that works is that the hype that prompts brands to just jump in and be like, you know, hey, we're in the metaverse now, baby, you know, and it's like, well, this kind of sucks, you know.
Yeah.
It you know, that hype, which is it, well, but it's not brands, it's not the fault of the brands to a degree, you know, like they are obviously keen to be where they believe the audiences are, or where, you know, where they can capture attention. But it's this hype that the metaverse was going to, you know, fix everything, or that, you know, this is a market just ready to generate cash. So I think it's a media problem. It's an industry problem as well, because there's a lot of platforms that were promising so much but couldn't deliver on those promises. And I think, you know, it kind of gets back to the whole genesis of NeoLife. We're a bunch of cynics, actually, sitting around kind of moaning to a degree about, yeah, that sucked, and we're never going to do that kind of thing. And it's about being realistic. And while we have grand ambitions, I think that hype period, I just like, I'm old enough to remember giving away my age, you know, Web 1.0, where you know, it was about, oh, if you want to be in the internet, you got to just hoover up as many domain names as you possibly can. You know, pets.com and all these kinds of things. But nobody knew what to do with them, or the offering that they put on these domain names that were selling for stupid amounts of money folded because they offered no value for people. And I feel like it's the same with these platforms and convincing brands, oh, you need a website. It's like, well, you didn't actually need a website back in the day. And of course, you know, the metaverse was the same with this land grab, and you got to be on Decentraland, or you got to be on the sandbox, you got to be here and there, or you've got to build your own platform. It just wasn't the case. And of course, that's led to, you know, the inevitable cries of the metaverse is dead, it was a flash in the pan. Exactly the same things they were saying about the internet after the first dot-com crash. So I think hype is dangerous. Hype, it undersells the really great efforts that other people are making who believe that this is a long-term game, that and are actually using real-world examples. We're not reinventing anything, you know. We're essentially just taking content and experiences and assets, and we're creating a new way for people to experience them, as opposed from a flat screen on our laptops or on our phones, and making them more spatial. And I guess that's why you're seeing the likes of Apple, when they're talking about their Vision Pro and they're advising creators who are creating for the Vision Pro, don't talk about the metaverse. Don't talk about virtual reality. We talk about spatial computing. We talk about the spatial internet. You know, it's just a different way of experiencing that content. Doesn't mean we don't go outside. Doesn't mean we don't watch the television. Doesn't mean we don't read a book or whatever. It's just a different way, a more compelling way, perhaps, to enjoy that content.
Well, you touched on a really interesting point there about the kind of first wave of Web 2 and e-commerce. It needed two things for e-commerce to work. It needed social media. So it needed, you know, a volume of traffic, of users to drive people, traffic, to somewhere where they could transact. And the smartphone.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a software, hardware play that were both fundamental to the unlocking of making e-commerce what it is today. Obviously, huge problems in terms of, you know, size, fit, and returns. And I'm sure VTO and Gen AI VTO are going to be very, very influential going forward. What in the world of automation do you think, or in the sense of the automation topic, what do you think is needed to really unlock the metaverse for, you know, the mass market?
Well, yeah, I think you make an excellent point about for Web 2 to really come to fruition, it needed the smartphone, it needed a greater adoption of internet accessibility. You know, I think Amazon took years and years to turn a profit until it became an essential part of people's lives, but it couldn't become an essential part until enough people were plugged in or enough people were, you know, reliant on their phones or devices and could understand that, yeah, I can buy something online and it's a good service. So it's going to take the same with fashion, with brands, to get into this Web3 and this spatial and or metaversal experience. It's going to need that killer application that is going to consolidate and make it really easy, not just for brands to upload their stuff and to have that virtual shop front or virtual experience, but for the user to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to take a look at the latest collection from brand X, and I'm going to view it in my living room. You know, mm-hmm. It's going to be simply a matter of, you know, doing a quick map of my surroundings, and by which I mean it's, you know, multiple images taken on your smartphone. It gets a sense of your positioning, and then, you know, the virtual avatars are presented to you as you sit on your couch. I mean, we already see. Talking of Amazon, also IKEA, you're able to drag and drop or at least view items, homeware items in your living room. So you can see a sofa, you can try a few different colors, you can position it somewhere in the room, and you can make a fairly decent decision on whether or not that's right for you. You don't have to go in, sit down. Generally, all sofas feel the same. And a lot of people just rely on reviews anyway that they see on the website. So I feel like... we're moving towards that, but it's going to require a single bit of software. So I think the hardware is probably nearly there, but it's going to need a single bit of software that's just so damn easy to use that becomes indispensable. And that, you know, I think also that reward mechanism is crucial. If I engage with this piece of software, if I buy something through the software, then you're earning points. Just as if I shop at a specific supermarket, I scan my QR code. It's earning me points so that I go back there and shop there. So there's always going to be that crossover between real world and the digital side of things too. And then of course the exclusivity argument as well. Brands doing deals with a platform so that, you know, there are. Because I'm a shopper through that, I can drag people back in store because they get exclusive access to other things. You know, it's all tying everything up together.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think for brands using digital product creation, that's really interesting. That extends the value of their intellectual property into something that could lead to a transaction or ownership in a digital capacity. I think that's really interesting. Brands who aren't using DPC, they've got a long way to go because it completely shuts the door to the metaverse because they don't have the internal skill, capability, haven't made that initial step, and then makes it look like a real uphill struggle. But I guess I was talking to Sacha McFarlane about this. There are some brands that have this block, they can't cross this brain bridge of digitization and transformation, and the brands that can't. May not survive. The brands that do have this wonderful opportunity that you're explaining to us, Dave. So I think the digitization of everything is fundamental, but quarterlies are important for business, right? And so you've got to make sure there's a really, really compelling financial reason to embark on this.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the brain block that you mentioned happens because of that hype that we discussed in the hate section. You know, like I think brands look at a digital version of an outfit and they're like, why would anybody want to own that in a digital version? It's like, no, you're missing the point. This is purely it is content that we're not looking to remove the need for a physical outfit. What we're doing is we are making your brand, making your products more accessible in a more compelling way, and also opening that up to new markets who don't have the benefit of necessarily going to a store. Now, you could say, well, yeah, but they've got website access. they do, obviously. But this incorporates things like, you know, I have your size, I have your measurements in the database. So you can actually see an avatar of yourself wearing an outfit, and you can mix and match, and you can do it, you know, you can walk around the avatar, you can see in either a virtual or an augmented capacity, and you can see the fit, you can see what it might look like on you, and these are things that you can try, you can get close to with a website, but the technology exists that you can do it. You can do it in a more virtual way, in a more compelling way. And then, of course, it's just a matter of, yes, I'll take that, bang, and then that order is fulfilled and delivered to your door. What's missing, as we've discussed, is that conduit that is easy for brands and is easy for users to come together and to have that seamless interaction. And until that happens, there's a lot of barriers of you know, brands like, oh, I don't know how to set that up, and users like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to get my stuff stolen and all that kind of thing. But, you know, it all is still very, comes back to a very practical, physical, traditional way of shopping. It's just a different way of presenting it.
I think my hunch there is that brands are so, the product is so fundamental to everything they do. When they see it depicted in a way that's suboptimal, they retrench. Mm. They don't want to be part of it, and they don't want to be associated with it. Because what you're really alluding to here is that there's a progression at play in terms of how people experience products, content, and services. And it's about forgetting what it is. It's just making sure that the brand connects with its audience within this platform. Because that's fundamentally, it's that connection that leads to transactions. I think maybe brands find it a little bit easier with Roblox because the avatar body shape mesh is just a game. It's just a figure. They're saying, well, yeah, what does Tommy look like on that figure? What does Nike look like on that figure? It looks fun. It looks playful. We're happy with that. The moment you put a humanoid avatar on and you start draping it in a real life collection, they're like, it doesn't work.
Yeah, and Roblox has the benefit of you know, releasing a brand being able to release a product in that ecosystem, because they know it's going to stay in that ecosystem. It becomes a collectible for players, the huge number of players that were in there every day. So yeah, you're right. When it comes to a photorealistic avatar wearing something that could potentially be purchased in the physical world, a brand is probably quite right to think, oh, it's not representative of the fabric or, you know, the wearing experience. But I would say that, you know, looking at Neolife, we use Unreal Engine 5, and just the fabrics and the meshes and the quality of what we're seeing that our development teams are producing is quite astonishing. And you do really get this sense. And of course, Unreal is not going to stop refining this and making it easier and easier to access, and so it's astonishing how that just the quality that's being produced. And I feel like that's also, again, a software issue that's going to remove a lot of barriers.
Agreed. Well, Dave, thank you so much for your insights on the show today. That kind of wraps everything up. How can people follow the work that you do?
Yeah, they should head to neolife.com, spelled Neolyfe. The website's just launched. We're in development right now. We're looking to launch towards the end of this year. And they can also find us on Twitter, Neo_LYFE. But yeah, we're just really excited to invite people along on this journey. We're kind of brand new-ish in terms of the project itself, but yeah, like I say, there's a lot of experience that's going into this, and it's going to be really interesting to watch this evolve. And eventually, we'll open it up to creators to come in, game makers, brands, and it'll be one big experiment in making, you know, hopefully being part of that tipping point that brings this to more and more people.
Yeah, absolutely. And given the experience and the team you have, this is definitely metaverse next gen. as far as I can tell.
Boldly claiming that we are, you know, at the forefront of Metaverse 2.0. So, you know, if people believe that, we're in a good place.
Absolutely. we'll obviously put all the links into the show notes to make sure that the audience can keep up to date with everything happening with yourself and with NeoLife. So just to finish, I'd just like to say, whether you're a creator, a builder, or a player in the digital world, have fun and enjoy being at the frontier of technology that is definitely changing the future. We'll see you next time on Love Hate.